I merely desire to say that as you read the pamphlet I read with you, and the description and explanation therein contained as to who God is, are entirely erroneous and blasphemous. Jesus never claimed or taught, while on earth, that he was God, and this I say because he has so instructed us. And he never since becoming a spirit has made any such claim, and the teachings of the new church in this particular are all wrong and tend to lead men away from the true conception of who God and Jesus both are. Swedenborg has often conversed with me about his teachings and declared that his explanations as to God are not in accord with the knowledge that he now has, and that the teachings as contained in his books upon this subject were the results very largely of his own speculations, and the results of his endeavors in trying to reconcile what he thought was an absurd conception of the nature and being of God with the true interpretation of the Bible. He could not accept the doctrine of the Trinity, as explained and accepted and taught by the Church, and hence, being a believer in the inspiration of the Bible and its infallibility of religious truths, he sought some exegesis, critical explanation or analysis, that might be consistent with the Bible, and at the same time in consonance with his ideas of reason and common sense. But, as he now says, he added mysticism to mysticism, and irrational explanations to irrational explanations, and the result was that his teachings were more. 526, The Paget Messages 1917, absurd and more difficult to understand than were the teachings of his original church. The doctrine of the Trinity, as you have been told, is not true, and never had any authority in the teachings of Jesus or those of the apostles and Bible writers, and was merely the deduction of some of the old fathers of the church, arising from their speculations and desire to make of Jesus a God, though a lesser God than the Father, and at the same time one with the Father and a part of the Godhead that must be considered as being only one God, and as taught by the Old Testament writers and prophets that there is only one God. This doctrine, of course, was absurd and, hence, was one of the mysteries of God, but, nevertheless, was taught as a truth and incumbent upon man to believe whether they could understand it or not, which of course, they could not. But the doctrine was not accepted by all the writers of the early days, for as you know, there were bitter controversies among these expounders of what they supposed to be the scriptures, upon the question as to who Jesus was, and his relation to God. But as the years went by, the doctrine of the Trinity became firmly established as a canon of belief in the Church, and in my time on earth it was believed, and not questioned by the Church, and I believed it also, although I could not understand it. Now, Swedenborg was a member of the church that bore my name and which I was credited with having founded, and believed in its doctrines, even as to the Trinity, and the actual transformation of the wine and bread into the blood and body of Jesus, and he continued in this belief up to the time of his wonderful visions of the spirit world and his experience in meeting the spirits and angels of that world, including Jesus, whom he in his writings claimed to be God, and with whom he had many conversations and from whom he learned the spiritual truths that he declared to the world. As you have been told, in the working out of the plans of the celestial angels, under the leadership of Jesus, Swedenborg was selected as the instrumentality through whom the spiritual truths should be revealed to mankind, and in carrying out that plan, power was given to him to come in his spirit perceptions or his inner sight, as he calls it, into the spirit world and see the conditions of spirits and angels, and also of their environments, and learn the higher truths from conversations with spirits and angels. And he did come in the manner indicated and communed as he has claimed, except that he never talked with God, but only with Jesus, who he misconceived to be God, and this cannot be wondered at, for Jesus was a spirit, so transcendent in glory and love and wisdom, that it was almost natural, as I may say, that the mortal in his new and unusual experience should conceive this glorious Jesus to be God himself. But it was not God, only Jesus that this seer saw and listened to. Having a conception of this kind, you can readily see that when he came into his mortal self again, and many times this occurred, he firmly believed that Jesus, who had form and individuality in the spirit world similar to what he had when on earth, was actually God, and it therefore became easy for Swedenborg to reject the doctrine of the Trinity, and in its place proclaim, Jesus is God, manifested in the flesh, and God is Jesus, the divine man. Of course, you must understand that in the exercise of this seership, he experienced the doubts and fears that at times what he saw and heard might not be things of actuality, and that possibly his imagination, or as in these latter days, what is called the subconscious mind, was deceiving him, and being a man of extraordinary mentality and strong convictions, as well as established faith in the doctrines of the church to which he belonged, many of his interpretations of what he saw and heard, and his teachings therefrom, were limited and flavored by his existing mental condition and faith. He has told me that for many years before his experience as seer, he had to a more or less extent doubted the truth of the Trinity, and accepted it only as a mystery, and because the Church declared it to be a truth, and that after his experiences as such seer, believing in the statements of the Bible as the infallible words of God, and also believing that he had seen God in the person of Jesus, he sought an explanation of these Bible statements and a reconciliation of them with his belief that Jesus was God, and the result was his declared doctrine that Jesus is God. And so in many other of his teachings, based upon his experience in the spirit world, he embraced many errors and misconceptions of the truths, and to such an extent that, as you have been told, his mission, in its results, was a failure, and the truths that he had been selected to learn and declare to the world were never made known to mankind. 527, The Paget Messages 1917. This failure was disappointing to the spirits who conceived this plan and in whom were lodged the spiritual truths of God, and who were acting as God's instruments in their endeavor to make them known to humanity. But it will be more satisfactory to you, and convincing to whomsoever may read the truths that you are receiving from these same high spirits that selected him, as their messenger, to have Swedenborg come himself, and explain the workings of his mission, and the causes and particulars of his failure in doing the great work that had been assigned him to do. He says that he has one consolation that may who have founded churches and attempted to declare spiritual truths upon which doctrines and creeds have been promulgated and believed in, and that is that his followers are so comparatively few in numbers, and consequently, so many less mortals are being deceived by his teachings. And I can appreciate the consolation that he may have and this fact, for my teachings and beliefs that are false as his are false, are believed in and followed by a very large number of mortals, to their injury. Well, I am glad for the opportunity to write you tonight, and I am still waiting for the chance to finish my message to my people on the errors of continuing in my teachings, and the necessity for them to become undeceived, and learn the truths that are now being declared to mankind. I will not write further. So good night, your brother in Christ, Martin Luther. Let me write you a line, for I am interested in what has just been written you, for when I lived on earth, I was a Swedenborgian or new churchman, and believed in the doctrines of that church, and especially in the cornerstone of its beliefs, and that is that Jesus was God, and the only God to be worshipped as such and accepted as the incarnate God, who came to earth and lived and taught among men the coming of God into the flesh. Well, I, when on earth, was a leader or preacher in that church, and during the course of my ministry I not only taught but wrote many pamphlets and some books upon this doctrine of God becoming man in the form of Jesus, and on many other doctrines, that I now know to be untrue. And my authority for saying that this fundamental doctrine of the church is untrue, is that I have seen and talked with Jesus in the Spirit 528, world, and learned that he is only the spirit of a mortal, but the highest and the most glorious spirit in all the heavens, and is not God, and I have never seen God nor any spirit who has seen him with the spirit eyes, though Jesus and others of the highest spirits say that they have seen him with their soul perceptions, which must be true because Jesus is so much like God in this, that he cannot tell a lie. But I know that there is a God, and my knowledge is based on certainty, but the basis of this certainty I cannot explain to you, as you could not comprehend my explanation. But God lives and rules and loves, and is present with us and with you in some or many of his attributes, and Jesus is not this God. I wish that I could come to my people and tell them of the errors of their beliefs, and the truths as they exist and to the extent as now known to me. But I have no hope of ever being able to do so, for one of the cardinal doctrines of the churches, that with the passing of Swedenborg passed the possibility of all communications between God or his angels and mortals as to spiritual truths, and that it is contrary to God's will that mortals should attempt to penetrate the veil that separates the two worlds. How such beliefs as I taught now cause me suffering and regret, for I see no way of remedying the wrong that I did, and of turning the thoughts of my followers into the paths that lead to truth and the certainty of heaven. As this is my first attempt to communicate, I am somewhat tired and must stop. But I thank you for the opportunity, and hope that sometime I may have the privilege of again writing. Notwithstanding my erroneous beliefs, I have in my soul some of the Father's divine love that enables me to sign myself, your brother in Christ, Chauncey Giles. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Yes, Luther wrote, and the other spirit I don't know, but I have no doubt that he is whom he represents himself to be. He seemed to be in much earnestness and was very anxious to write, and seeing that he was a good spirit with a message, we let him write, and he felt better by having done so. Swedenborg was here tonight and is very anxious to write, and soon he will, as he feels that he must write a message on the subject that you have been interested in recently. I will not write more. The Paget Messages 1917, so with my love I will say good night. Your own true and loving, Helen. March 2, 1917. I am here, Jesus. I come tonight to write my message on the soul, and will do so, if we can establish the necessary rapport. Well, the subject is of vast importance, and difficult of explanation, for there is nothing on earth known to man, with which a comparison may be made, and, generally man cannot understand truth, or the nature of things, except by comparison with what they already know to exist, and with whose qualities and characteristics they are acquainted. There is nothing in the material world that will afford a basis of comparison with the soul. And, hence, it is difficult for men to comprehend the nature and qualities of the soul by the mere intellectual perceptions and reason, and in order to understand the nature of this great creation, the soul, men must have something of a spiritual development and the possession of what may be known as the soul perceptions. Only soul can understand soul, and the soul that seeks to comprehend the nature of itself, must be a live soul, with its faculties developed to a small degree, at least. First, I will say, that the human soul must be a creature of God and not emanation from him, as a part of his soul, and when men speak and teach that the human soul is a part of the oversoul, they teach what is not true. This soul is merely a creature of the Father, just as are the other parts of man, such as the intellect and the spirit body and the material body, and which before its creation had no existence. It has not existed from the beginning of eternity, if you can imagine that eternity ever had a beginning. I mean that there was a time when the human soul had no existence, and whether there will ever come a time when any human soul will cease to have an existence, I do not know, nor does any spirit, only God knows that fact. But this I do know, that whenever the human soul partakes of the essence of the Father, and thereby becomes divine itself, and the possessor of his substance of love, that soul realizes to a certainty that it is immortal, and can never again become less than immortal. As God is immortal, the soul that has been transformed into the substance of the Father becomes immortal, and, never again can the decree, dying thou shalt die, be pronounced upon it. As I said, there was a period in eternity when the human soul did not exist and was created by the Father, and when it was made the highest and the most perfect of all God's creation, to such an extent that it was made in his image, the only one or thing of all his creations that was made in his image, and the only part of man that was made in his image, for the soul is the man and all his attributes and qualities, such as his intellect and spirit body and material body and appetites and passions, are merely appendages or means of manifestation given to that soul, to be its companions while passing through its existence on earth, and also, qualifiedly, while living in eternity. I mean some of the appendages will accompany the soul in its existence in the spirit world, whether that existence be for all eternity or not. But this soul, great and wonderful as it is, was created in the mere image and likeness of God, and not in or of his substance or essence, the divine of the universe, and it, the soul, may cease to exist without any part of the divine nature or substance of the Father being lessened or in any way affected, and hence, when men teach or believe that man, or the soul of man is divine, or has any of the qualities or substance of the divine, such teaching and belief are erroneous, because man is only and merely the created man, the mere likeness but no part of the Father or of his substance and qualities. While the soul of man is of the highest order of creation, and his attributes and qualities correspond, yet he is no more divine in essential constituents, than are the lower objects of creation, they each being a creation, and not an emanation, of their Creator. True it is that the soul of man is of a higher order of creation than any other created things, and is the only creature made in the image of God, and was made the perfect man, yet man, the soul, can never become anything different or greater than the perfect man, unless he receives and possesses the divine essence and qualities of the Father, which he did not possess at his creation, although, most wonderful gift, with his creation, God bestowed upon him the privilege of receiving this great substance of the divine nature, and thereby become divine himself. The perfectly created man could become the divine angel, if he, the man, so willed it and obeyed the commands of the Father, and pursued the way provided by the Father for obtaining and possessing that divinity. 529, The Paget Messages 1917. As I have said, the souls, the human souls, for the indwelling of which God provided material bodies, that they might live the mortal lives, were created just as, subsequently, these material bodies were created, and this creation of the soul took place long before the appearance of man on earth, as a mortal, and the soul prior to such appearance, had its existence in the spirit world as a substantial conscious entity, although without a visible form, and, I may say, individuality, but yet, having a distinct personality, so that it was different and distinct from every other soul. Its existence and presence could be sensed by every other soul that came in contact with it, and yet to the spirit vision of the other soul it was not visible. And such is the fact now. The spirit world is filled with these unincarnated souls, awaiting the time of their incarnation, and we spirits know of and sense their presence, and yet with our spirit eyes we cannot see them, and not until they become dwellers in the human form and in the spirit body that inhabits that form, can we see the individual soul. And the fact that I have just stated, illustrates, in a way, describes the being of him, in whose image these souls are created. We know and can sense the existence and presence of the Father, and yet, even with our spiritual eyes we cannot see him, and only when we have our soul developed by the divine essence of his love, can we perceive him with our soul perception, because you have not words in your language to convey its meaning, and nothing in created nature, of which you have knowledge of in which a comparison can be made. But it is a truth, for the vision of the soul perception to its possessor is just as real, as I may say, objective, as is the vision of the mortal sight to the mortal. It may be asked, in considering this matter of the creation of the soul, were all souls that have been incarnated, or that are awaiting incarnation, created at the same time, or is that creation still going on? I do knows that the spirit world contains many souls, such as I have described awaiting their temporary homes, and the assumption of individuality in the human form, but as to whether that creation has ended, and at some time the reproduction of men for the embodying of these souls, will cease, I do not know, and the Father has never revealed it to me, or to the others of his angels who are close to him in his divinity and substance. The Father has not revealed to me all the truths and the workings and objects of his creative 530 laws, and neither has he given to me all power and wisdom and omniscience as some may find justification for believing in certain of the statements of the Bible. I am a progressive spirit, and as I grew in love and knowledge and wisdom when on earth, I am still growing in these qualities, and the love and mercy of the Father come to me with the assurance that never in all eternity will I cease to progress towards the very fountainhead of these attributes of Him, the only God, the all in all. As I was saying, the soul of man is the man, before, while in the mortal existence and ever after in the spirit world, and all other parts of man, such as the mind and body and spirit are mere attributes, which may be dissevered from him as the soul progresses in its development toward its destiny of either the perfect man or the divine angel, and in the latter progression, men may not know it, but it is a truth, that the mind, that is the mind as known to mankind, becomes, as it were, non-existent, and this mind, as some say, the carnal mind, becomes displaced and replaced by the mind of the transformed soul, which is in substance and quality, to a degree, the mind of deity, itself. Many theologians and philosophers and metaphysicians believe and teach that the soul, spirit and mind are substantially one and the same thing, and that any one of them may be said to be the man, the ego, and that in the spirit world one or the other of these entities is that which persists and determines in its development or want of development the condition or state of man after death. But this conception of these parts of man are erroneous, for they each have a distinct and separate existence and functioning, whether man be a mortal or spirit. The mind in its qualities and operations, is very well known to man, because of its varied manifestations, and being that part of man which is more of the nature of the material, and has been the subject of greater research and study than has been the soul or the spirit. While men have, during all the centuries, speculated upon and attempted to define the soul and its qualities and attributes, yet to them it has been intransitive, and impossible of comprehension by the intellect, which is the only instrumentality that man generally possesses to search for the great truth of the soul, and hence, the question, of what is the soul, has never been satisfactorily or authoritatively answered, though to some of these searchers, when inspiration may have shed a faint light upon them, some glimpse of the Paget Messages 1917, what the soul is, has come to them. Yet to most men who have sought to solve the problem, the soul and spirit and mind are substantially the same thing. But the soul, as concerning man, is a thing of itself, alone, a substance real, though invisible to mortals. The soul is the discerner and portrayer of men's moral and spiritual condition, never dying, so far as known, and the real ego of the man. In it are centered the love principle, the affections, the appetites and the passions, and possibilities of receiving and possessing and assimilating those things that will either elevate man to the state or condition of the divine angel or the perfect man, or lower him to the condition that fits him for the hells of darkness and suffering. The soul is subject to the will of man, which is the greatest of all endowments that were bestowed upon him by his Maker at his creation, and is the certain index of the workings of that will either in thought or action, and in the souls, qualities of love and affection and appetites and passions are influenced by the power of the will, either for good or evil. It may be dormant and stagnate, or it may be active and progress. And so its energies may be ruled by the will for good or evil, but these energies belong to it and are no part of the will. The soul's home is in the spirit body, whether that body is encased in the mortal or not, and it is never without such spirit body, which in appearance and composition is determined by the condition and state of the soul. And finally, the soul or its condition decides the destiny of man, as he continues in his existence in the spirit world, not a final destiny, because the condition of the soul is never fixed, and as this condition changes, man's destiny changes, for destiny is the thing of the moment, and finality is not known to the progress of the soul, until it becomes the perfect man and is then satisfied and seek no higher progress. Now, in your common language and also in your theological and philosophical terms, mortals who have passed to spirit life are said to be spirits, and in a certain sense this is true. But such mortals are not nebulous, unformed and invisible existences, they have a reality of substance, more real and enduring than has man as a mortal, and are in form and features visible and subject to touch and the object of the spiritual senses. So when men speak of soul, spirit and body, if they understood the truth of the terms, they would say, soul, spirit body, and material body. There is a spirit, but it is altogether distinct and different from the spirit body, and also from the 531, soul. It is not part of the spirit body, but is an attribute of the soul, exclusively, and without the soul, it could not exist. It has no substance as has the soul, and it is not visible to even the spirit vision, only the effect of its workings can be seen or understood, and it is without body, form or substance. And yet it is real and powerful, and when existing never ceasing in its operations, and is an attribute of all souls. Then what is the spirit? Simply this, the active energy of the soul. As I have said, the soul has its energy, which may be dormant or which may be active. If dormant, the spirit is not in existence. If active, the spirit is present, and manifests that energy in action. So to confuse the spirit with the soul, as being identical, leads to error and away from the truth. It is said that God is spirit, which in a sense is true, for spirit is a part of his great soul qualities, and which he uses to manifest his presence in the universe. But to say that spirit is God is not stating the truth, unless you are willing to accept as true the proposition that a part is the whole. In the divine economy, God is all of spirit, but spirit is only the messenger of God, by which he manifests the energies of his great soul. And so with man. Spirit is not man's soul, but man's soul is spirit, as it is the instrumentality by which the soul of man makes known its energies and powers and presence. Well, I have written enough for tonight, but sometime I will come and simplify this subject. But remember this, that soul is God. Soul is man, and all manifestations, such as spirit, and spirit body are merely evidences of the existence of the soul, the real man. I have been with you as I promised, and I know that Father will bless you. So with my love and blessing, I will say good night. Your brother and friend, Jesus. March 3, 1917. I am here, Samuel C. Mills. Well, I heard what Forrest said, and I am certain that he believes what he said to be true. For I can tell you that he has become a wonderfully bright spirit, and seems to be so happy and joyful. Well, it certainly is strange to me. Here am I, who was in some light and comparatively happy when he came into the spirit world and went into the hells of darkness and suffering, and now he is all beautiful and happy, and I am still where I was. It certainly is wonderful. The Paget Messages 1917, but as I told you in my last letter, I cannot now remain satisfied with my condition, and I am going to seek, and have already started, to get this love that he tells me is the cause of his wonderful change, and I will not cease seeking until I succeed in obtaining it, for I feel that if he could get the love, I can. He has talked with me, and while he could not explain just how the change came to him, yet he says that he accepted your advice and the help of your wife, and commenced to pray, blindly and without faith, and continued until he commenced to realize that something that he had never felt before was working in his soul, and continued to work the more he prayed, and he didn't stop praying until the darkness left him, and with it the most of his suffering. This is all that he could tell me, and I am following him, and I hope that before long I will be able to write to you as he did. Won't that be a wonderful thing? I will not write more, but I will pray and hope that you will pray for me. The spirits who are here and who seem to love you so much, say that they will pray with me, and they tell me that there will be no doubt as to the results. So good night, your old friend, Samuel C. Mills. March 4, 1917. I am here, Forrest. Well, Ned, excuse me for intruding just now, but I am so happy that I cannot refrain from telling you of my happiness, for I know that you will rejoice with me. I'm now out of my darkness, and the love of the Father is working in my soul, so that I feel, as some of your earth poets have said, as light as air, and if you could only see the air in which I now am, you would more deeply understand what the expression means in my case. I am now so certain that this love is a thing of reality, and so effective to make a dark, suffering spirit one of light and freedom from pain, that I can assert with all the conviction of a rescued soul, that the love of the Father is the one thing in all the spirit world that is no uncertainty about it. I will not write more now, and I know that you will pardon me for having intruded. Now I feel that I can go to my mother and tell her of this wonderful love, and the true way to light and progress, and I will go at once, and I pray the Father that my persuasion may be effective and enable me to hear my mother say to me that she will trust me and follow me in the way that I shall tell her of. So thanking you, and believing that you have been my greatest friend, although I realize that I did not deserve your kindness, I will say good night. Your old friend, Edwin Forrest. I am here, Perry. I am very weak, but I must tell you that I am feeling better, For now I do not believe that I am doomed for all eternity to the damnation of darkness and suffering, and when I think back that but for you and the loving spirits that you brought to me, I would be without hope, my heart is so filled with gratitude that it seems as if it must break asunder.